This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Tuesday, March 5th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and my objective today is the same as it always is, which is to help you become a better investor and accomplish this. We do the same thing every day. It's answering your questions. It's giving you perspective. It's giving you the right data to focus on, not just what the headlines are saying, but what really matters when it comes to your investment journey. And that's what it is. It's a journey. It's all about the journey. You have to embrace that. You're never going to be the perfect investor. You're never going to make the best decision every single time. But it's really about going into every decision with your eyes wide open, knowing the pros and cons, the risks and rewards, and making sure that fits with your ultimate goals and dreams of financial freedom. But first, I wanted to highlight a contest that is underway right now. It's the InvestTalk Market Madness. And instead of basketball brackets, we are pitting companies head-to-head in an epic showdown of market prowess. It's free to join, free to fill out your bracket, and you can compete for a grand prize of $1,000. And this is how it works. It's simple. Let's say company A and company B are facing off. If company A's stock price increases more than company B or decreases less than company B in a particular day, then company A moves on. And we the first day of competition is going to be March 19th. March 19th is the first day. And we're going to preview each contest, each matchup, and discuss each company. Obviously, any given day, anything can happen. So I think that's why we picked it that way, to make it a little bit more exciting. You never know what company is going to outperform the next on a given day. So that's how we are doing this. So you can join the fun. Just head over to investtalk.com and complete your bracket. The deadline is March 17th to submit your predictions. Now, be sure to download every podcast for more updates and details as we go along with our inaugural InvestTalk Market Madness contest. Now, with that said, let's talk about the market performance for today. And we're going to talk about the market performance today and run down some short topics. But as usual, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hello, this is Luke from New York. I'm calling about Smith & Wesson, ticker symbol SWBI. Wanted to get your opinion on this stock. What's your valuation of this stock? Thank you. I will be listening for your answer on the podcast.
All right. Looking at Smith and Wesson. Wesson, not Weston. W-E-S-S-O-N. Wesson. And this is a gun maker. $600 million market cap. And this is a name whose business has been struggling. They're in $4.54 in 2021 and $4.25 in 2022. But last year only made 94 cents, down 78%. And earnings are supposed to fall another 28% this year to 68 cents per share. So that's why this is down in the dumps, for really good reason. And even if you go based on forward-looking earnings, you're talking about a mid to high teens multiple for a company that, frankly, is struggling. You know, I think it's really, there was a pull forward in demand, like a lot of things during the pandemic. People had a lot of money to buy individual products as opposed to spending money on services. And guns were one of those, especially in a very chaotic era like the pandemic. And suddenly there was a pull forward in that demand, but now that's waning. And so I don't like that. And the fact that, now the positive here is they don't have a lot of debt. They use those good times to right-sized their balance sheets, but their free cash flow is now negative, and I don't like that either. The technicals are poor, so I just see no reason to get into that at the current time. There's just not a whole lot of tailwinds to more gun ownership and gun purchases because everyone bought them during the pandemic that we're probably going to. Thanks for the call. Now, with a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we're going to touch on our main focus point, and that is how to use gold in your portfolio. We'll talk about what you need to know about the advantage of risks and risks of investing in gold. So we're going to talk about gold as a hedge against inflation, diversifying with gold and silver, and how much of your portfolio should you allocate to gold. So we're going to talk about all of that. In addition, we're going to touch a bit on spring selling season in the housing market. That's coming up. What should you expect going forward? And then lastly, is private equity actually worth it? We're going to dig into some of the numbers there. It's a popular space for money, people to put money into over the last decade. It's been sold hard, especially by the big Wall Street giants. And it did well during an era of very low interest rates. Now things are different, and the question is how will they fare? So we're going to touch on that as well. But most importantly, we're going to touch on your calls. And we have some voice bank questions. One is on OPP, the North River North Double Line Strategic Opportunity Fund, as well as a call on entry points. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. And please remember that you can call anytime and leave your voice bank question at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market performance for today. And it was a decidedly bloody day, especially for the growth side of the market. Large cap growth down 2.3%. The broad market was down only about 1%. That means large cap value, it was flat. Even small cap value was up 64 basis points. Large cap value was only down 3 basis points, okay? Versus large cap growth down 229 basis points. And it was led by a few large names. Tesla, one of the biggest, down 4% there. Apple down 2.8%. SoFi Technologies down 15%. You had some AI names with some major reversals. Nvidia stayed pretty strong, but you did have MSCI. Actually, that was up as well. Let me pull this up here. Using it. Yeah, those two names held strong, but a lot of the other growth names certainly suffered. And you're definitely seeing that reversal right now. Bitcoin, it looks like it has topped. Obviously, you won't know until hindsight, but it definitely had a very solid reversal. It's very common. Oh, it hit all-time highs, reverse off of that, and head to a large pullback. And I think there's a decent chance that we are there on Bitcoin. So pretty interesting reversal really across the market. Remember, a lot of the growth side of the market, especially and with Bitcoin, there's a lot of correlation there. You saw that in 2022 when Bitcoin pulled back dramatically, all the growth stocks did. And because a lot of people, their portfolios are huddled in that, right? Think of the average investor. They're chasing the sexy names, and it goes well when things go well, like it has so far this year, but it can reverse dramatically. And a lot of those people are on margin. And so if their tech stocks fall, like Tesla, for example, that can create a margin call that can feed on itself across various parts of the retail landscape. And most of those holdings from the retail investor are on the growthier side of the market and in Bitcoin. So there's certainly a high degree of correlation between crypto and, say, the NASDAQ. And today you had the NASDAQ that was down 267 points, nearly 2%, while the broad market didn't do too bad, actually less than 0.5%. That's a 2,500 different names, not highly exposed to, say, NASDAQ type companies. So very interesting day, big reversal. The ISM number came in fairly mixed, to be honest. Probably the main news on that front was really the ISM services employment index that hit 48. So remember, anything below 50 is shrinkage, and saying the services side of the economy is seeing employment decline, as opposed to previous month in January, it was flat 50.5, so slightly growing. But now in February, you basically saw layoffs in the service sector, and that is the majority of the economy. So I thought that was interesting. You saw the looks like we had a little bit of technical difficulties there as I was going through what happened in the market today. But to summarize, basically, this is the type of day that you were looking for when I was saying over the past week or so, we're in the vicinity of a market top. You feel it with the technicals. You feel it with the sentiment that's out there. Everyone and their mother is bulled up on the AI space as well as crypto and Bitcoin with a major reversal today. The growth side of the market with a major reversal today. The only saving grace is really what happened with NVIDIA and MSCI. You know, the AI darlings, they did not reverse, but I'm on the watch for that. And if we get a follow through and have a similar day like today, I think that's a very strong sign that we've reached the apex of this rally, at least in the growthier tech names and crypto and AI names over the last few months. So something I'll be watching to see if you get a follow through. One day doesn't create a trend, but once you get a second day, that starts a trend that can certainly start to feed on itself. So I'll be watching that as we close out the week. Now we're moving into a break. My phone lines are open. You know the number. It's 888-99-CHART.
Two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this topic, how to use gold in your portfolio. So we're going to talk about the risks of investing in gold, and is it a hedge against inflation? Does it create diversity in your portfolio when you hold gold and silver, and how much gold should you hold as an allocation in your portfolio? Now, the first question you have to ask yourself is, if you're going to buy gold, what should you buy? Should you own the commodity directly or own companies that mine and sell gold? Well, there's two schools of thought here. The mining companies, they're going to be more volatile. They have more what we call operating leverage. They also have more risks. So there can be problems with different mines. There can be rising input costs to operate mines, labor and fuel to run the machinery, etc. But when times are good, their profits go up exponentially. For example, let's say their average cost is $1,500 an ounce to mine the gold. Let's, for round numbers, say gold's at $2,000. It's now well above that now. But let's say it's at $2,000. They're earning $500 in gross profit. Well, gold goes to $2,500. Suddenly, their earnings, their gross profits doubled, right? From 500 to 1,000 an ounce. And so that's why when times are good and there's a trending higher gold price, the miners do very well. When things are meandering kind of, well, their profit margins, not a lot of growth unless they're growing their mines, but that takes a lot of CapEx and expenses. There's a lot of risk there. And so they can be, they're riskier. Bottom line, they're just riskier than owning the underlying. So as a portfolio diversifier, owning the bullion is probably the better way to go. If you're looking for the maximum return in a gold bull market or precious metal bull market, the miners are going to probably do the best in those periods. But you have to be very selective and own them in those periods. Now, before the collapse of Bretton Woods in 1971, the price of gold was fixed at $35 per troy ounce. And since then, gold's price has risen dramatically. Now, it hasn't outperformed the 60-40 bond portfolio, 60-40 stock bond portfolio. But in many periods, it has. And it can be a very good, like I said, portfolio diversifier. And in periods of risk off, periods of inflation, periods of a weak dollar, gold can do much better. And often does do much better than equities, fixed income, etc. So it's really about, say, timing. Now, I do think we're entering a new period where gold should do better than it has in the past. You know, just look at the 70s, right? We'll look at periods where gold did very, very well. 1973 to 74, gold was up 70%. 1977 and 1980, gold was up 45%. 1985 to 87, gold was up 16%. 2002 to 2010, gold was up 20%. 2018 to 2020, gold was up 21%. Outperforming any 60-40 portfolio bond index during those periods. Those are all periods where gold drastically outperformed their traditional investment counterpart. So it's clear that there are many, many periods where gold is a fantastic hedge. And it has a long history as more of a safe haven asset. And is largely independent of other asset classes. So that's what makes it a good diversifier. A lot of people say, oh, Bitcoin is a portfolio diversifier. But as time has gone on, it's pretty clear that it's becoming more and more correlated to the broader equities. And as I said earlier, the NASDAQ. Whereas gold is going to be a more pure play inflation hedge, as well as a hedge against market volatility. Now, how much gold did you hold? Well, depends, but probably no more than 20% of your portfolio. I think that's probably on the high end. And that can certainly fluctuate depending on maybe your outlook for market volatility, outlook for the dollar. And I would say we're entering a period where, maybe not this year, but in the next few years, market volatility likely headed higher. And if you look at just the history between now and when Bretton Woods was removed, we never had a period where debt to GDP ratio was this high. So it's hard to look at just that period and say, oh, it's going to perform the same. In reality, it's pretty clear we are entering some level of a debt spiral on the sovereign level. And so inflation is frankly going to be needed. It's going to be what is manufactured by government, because a deflationary bust like 08 is just untenable with our debt levels. And so I do think it's important for everyone to have some level of allocation to precious metals. Doesn't have to be a lot, but it could be up to that 15-20% level. Now, the next Invest Talk, we look into this topic: 3 key retirement decisions affected by higher yields. that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Art from Tucson. I'm calling in today about a fund. It's called the River North Double Line Strategic Opportunity Fund. It's OPP is the ticker. Talking to a friend of mine about this fund. He's a much higher risk investor than I am, but he said he uses it to get exposure to private equity markets through, I believe, bonds. I'm just curious as to how this fund works. I don't understand the mechanics of it. It has a very high yield, 14.5%, which I see as a red flag. Also has a very high expense ratio of 2.22%. I was just wondering if you could shed any light on how this fund actually works and where it is able to generate this kind of income for investors, and what you think of it as an investor. I'm tending to think that you wouldn't approve it, even though on the Schwab page it says it's a low-risk investment. Appreciate all you do for us, and look forward to the answer on the podcast. Thanks.
Well, it's definitely not low risk, and you can see that by the share price. This fell right around the pandemic era from $16 per share, hit a low around 10 and change, rallied all the way back to around 16 when it rates hit zero, and now it's at $8.34. So while it might have paid out that nice hefty dividend, you're still down on your purchase price by roughly 50%. You bought pre-pandemic or after that move. So you might look at that 14% yield. That sounds great, but guess what? You're still down. And the reason is because this is a closed-end fund and it operates on leverage. So first off, leverage. Second off, it owns a lot of junk credit. And you would imagine that's the case when you're investing in private equity. You have 14% of the portfolio is in triple B, 1% in A, and 16% in triple A. Those are the treasuries that it might own. But 12% in double B, 11% in B, 9% below B rated, so C or lower, and then not rated at all, 36%. So that's probably where that private equity is. And remember, private equity itself is leverage. So you're talking leverage on leverage on leverage. And so this is definitely not low risk. It is extensively high risk, very high risk. So unless you're willing to take on that risk, which I wouldn't, considering how I don't think private equity is going to have the same level of performance going forward that it has during the free money era, let's just call it, then this is a fund that is not worth the squeeze because of, as you can see, the price declines as well as that high risk that you're taking by owning what's inside this fund. Remember, don't just look at the yield, don't chase the yield, and you should tell your friend not to chase the yield as well. Now let's play two in a row from the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Daniel in Tennessee. Really enjoy your podcast, and I had a general question for you. When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, I was curious if I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it, or should I just hold on to it since I already own it? Just kind of curious for your perspective there. Thank you.
Well, first off, never take one man's opinion as gospel, including my own. This is all my opinion based on over 20 plus years of experience managing assets, looking at charts, looking at companies. I have extensive experience in this. But even the most experienced investor in the world is wrong. Regularly, often. So just because I say, okay, I think it's going to go down, doesn't mean it's guaranteed to go down. You have to look, you have to do your own research. You have to make your own decision. So once again, don't just take what I say on air and say, I'm going to go do that. Take it as an input. Do your own research. Then make a decision. Okay. And in conjunction with what I say and what your research says, et cetera, you have to think of tax consequences, for example. Is this account, is this investment in a tax deferred account or not? IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, or is it in a taxable account? And what are the tax implications of that? A lot of times when I say, hey, it's here now, this would be good support level, it's down 10, 20% from where it is today. And what that probably means is that from a risk reward perspective, it's not great after this run, for example. And maybe there are better opportunities now to get into. And that's what you always have to think about. Most people forget about that. And it's a simple concept that we learn very early on in business school. It's called opportunity cost. Every amount of capital that you have invested, whether that's in equities, bonds, real estate, whatever that is, there is an opportunity cost there. Meaning you can go take that money and invest it elsewhere and potentially get a better return. And oftentimes that is an underappreciated way of thinking about how to assess your portfolio, how to assess your holdings. Most people do it based on, oh, am I even? Has it been up? Am I happy with the investment or the sector or the economy? And the reality is, those things are fickle. Asset classes, sectors, companies, sentiment ebbs and flows. And usually when you're the happiest with it, it's the time you actually want to probably trim it, reallocate to that with something that has a better future prospect of returns. And when I say future, I'm talking an extended period of time, because a lot of people, they focus too much on just the short term. And that's trading. But we're investors. We're looking at companies based on the merits of their business, their leadership, their assets, and comparing it to others and constructing a portfolio that makes sense based on the current market environment. And if you're not thinking that way, then you're not going to open your eyes to the fact that there is opportunity cost in everything you own. So that's the way you want to think about it. Not because what I say is gospel, but because, hey, maybe you should think about redeploying that capital better. Now let's touch a bit on the housing market. And we are going into the spring selling season. And while housing prices have gone up over the past 7-8 months or so, if you zoom out, really, housing prices have been range bound since, call it early 2022. And it's pretty clear why. Sales are down. Inventory is down. Sales are down to about 4 million units on an annualized rate of existing homes. For context, peaked out at about 6.6 million units in early 2021. And it's pretty clear this situation isn't changing anytime soon. Why? Because for sale inventory remains very, very low. Less than a million existing homes are available on the market today. Less than a million. About 0.9, about 900,000. No one is selling because they want to keep their cheap mortgage. It's that simple. Now, how do you resolve the situation? Well, new home supply needs to come on, but it needs to come on at a rate that is way above the natural rate of depletion. I don't know if you know this, but there are a certain amount of homes that just are no longer inhabitable for various reasons, whether that is there's a fire, an earthquake, a natural disaster, whatever that is. Maybe they just get really too old and dilapidated where you can't live in them. There's a certain rate of attrition of homes in this country. And the new home market fills that there. And then up and above that number, you're talking about absorbing new home formation or household formation, excuse me. And then on top of that, then you have the amount that can fill the dearth of supply coming from the existing home market. But that means new home construction has to be up big, and it's up, but not in a gigantic way. Really, multifamily construction has been the main driver of new supply, and that's really in the rental market, and that's why rental prices have cooled. So the housing market is stuck. It's likely to remain stuck. Investment in housing is not that great. Construction spending, I think, last month fell. Now, it's not soft enough to really be a drag on construction employment. That's usually actually the leading indicator to a much weaker housing market much weaker jobs market that hasn't really materialized. Construction employment is still relatively robust. So what it's pretty clear is don't expect a lot from the housing market. One way or the other, a crash or a boom. It's a multi-year malaise that's setting in. And I've said this many times. Most people think housing market has to crash in nominal terms, like it did in 08. And the simple answer is, unless there's a lot of forced sellers, which there aren't, because people have jobs and people have locked in very low mortgage rates, unless there are a lot of forced sellers, the nominal price of homes not likely to fall dramatically. And prices can correct in a very different way that most people don't even ever think about. And that is in real terms, meaning you could have housing prices flat for many years, have inflation and incomes rising 3%, 4%, 5%, 6% a year, consistently year after year. And what that is, that's a correction in time. And on a real basis, in real terms. And if you look at the market, the housing market objectively, that's kind of what it's setting up to do. So while rates kind of gyrating here and there can kind of spark little flurries of activity, overall, the general state of the housing market is frozen. And unless you get some catalyst that's going to bring a ton of supply on market, that's kind of where you're at. Now, could there be some sort of incentive from government, for example? I could see that. But that's not happening this year. And demographics still remain relatively robust for the next few years. So the demand is going to hold it up. And when I say demographics, I mean the average boomer, not boomer, the average millennial, excuse me, the average millennial is still in the average buyer years, kind of the mid-30s. And so that demand is going to keep the housing market relatively bid for some time. And let's play another caller question now.
Hey, this is Andrew from Atlanta. Love the show. I was trying to reach out to Luke or Justin or Steve, and I was trying to reach out to you guys about this one. URNM. I hold this stock, just bought some more of it, and it's an ETF, excuse me. But I was looking at the Morningstar rating, and they don't think too much of this holding, and was curious, what are your thoughts in regards to this ETF? Is this a good place for me? Because if I wanted to try to invest in uranium, I'll listen for your answer on the show, and I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Sprott Uranium Miners ETF, URNM, and Morningstar gives it 4 stars. So I'm not sure what you're looking at, but that's 4 to 5 stars. That's pretty solid. Now, what this is it's an ETF that invests in uranium miners. The top three holdings are Kazatomprom is number one. That is out of Kazakhstan, I believe. And they are the biggest producer of uranium. Cameco, which is a Canadian mine, it's been the one we've owned for a long period of time. That's about 13.5% of the portfolio. And then Sprott Uranium Trust, 13% of the portfolio there. So that's roughly 40%+ of the overall portfolio. And then you have a bunch of smaller miners from there. And this is really, frankly, a trade. And it's pulled back recently, but nothing that is not unhealthy. It's a really a healthy correction back to around the 100-day moving average. So I see no reason why you want to sell it. I think the prospects for uranium going forward remain very robust, but pullback like this is actually a healthy little development. Now we're heading into our final break. Ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Now, you've heard us talking about the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest, and here's a twist. Instead of basketball brackets, we're pitting companies head-to-head in an epic showdown of market prowess. And you can sign up right now and complete your bracket for the potential to win the grand prize of $1,000. By heading over to investtalk.com right now for your chance to win big. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them for their courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. The Puma 51 says, how do you feel about ticker KO? Should pick up some more shares around the recent level, $60, or wait for a better buy point, say back around the mid to low 50s. I did grab some up around $54 per share. Looking at KO for everyone out there, that is your classic Coke, KO. And this peaked back in April of 2022, and that was around $67. And it's been on a series of lower highs and lower lows since your classic downtrend. And frankly, you have to think of Coke as a bond in many ways. Remember, it's such a large business and there's not a lot of avenues for growth here. It does $11 to $12 billion a quarter in revenue. And earnings growth usually averages around the nominal growth of GDP, which is around, say, 4, 5, 6%. That's what you're seeing this year. Earnings expected to grow 5%, 7% next year. And those are expected to remain relatively stable. But remember, when you pay that nice 3.3% dividend, this is viewed in many ways like a bond, a high yield bond. And so if interest rates go up, that's going to be a headwind to consumer staple stocks like Coke. Now, from a valuation perspective, you're talking about enterprise value to EBITDA right around 18.5, which historically is right around average. So from that perspective, I would say it's fairly valued. Good cash flows, $9.7 billion free cash flow. on a $250 billion market cap, 4% free cash flow yield. Not amazing. And that free cash flow continues to decline from its peak around nearly $12 billion. So I don't like those trends. It certainly could pay its dividend, but its dividend is a bit stretched. The cash dividend payout ratio on 81%. So I don't think it's in immediate need of cutting, but I don't think they're going to grow their dividend either. So I would certainly wait on it. I would wait till the low 50s to get this undervalued. That's where I would say it's undervalued in the low 50s. Right now it's right on $60 per share. So it needs a good 15 to 20% drop from here for it to look particularly attractive from a valuation perspective. Now, it's a good business, return equity right around 40%, but I just don't like that trend in free cash flow, trend in earnings, and trend mainly in the stock. So I have no reason to get super bullish on it near term. Thanks for the call. Now, let's talk a bit about, well, I don't know if we have time. This is a long topic. It's on private equity, and I have a lot of data. And unfortunately, we're pretty much out of time. So we're going to have to hold that for the next show. But that about does it. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Remember to follow us on social media and learn more at InvestTalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.